What's up, everybody? This is Healing Intentions, and I'm your host, Dr. Adrian Mimetti. This podcast is about natural health and wellness, mental health, cannabis, psychedelics, philosophy, and spirituality. Today, my guest is Jeff Chilton. Jeff was raised in the Pacific Northwest, studied ethnomycology at the University of Washington in the late 60s, and started working on a commercial mushroom farm in Olympia, Washington in 1973. During the next 10 years, he became the production manager, responsible for the cultivation of over 2 million pounds of agaricus mushrooms per year, and was also involved in the research and development of shiitake, oyster, and enoki mushrooms, which resulted in the earliest U.S. fresh shiitake sales in 1978. In the late 70s, he was a founder of Mycomedia, which held four mushroom conferences in the Pacific Northwest. These educational conferences brought together educators and experts in mushroom identification, ethnomycology, and mushroom cultivation. During this period, Jeff co-authored the highly acclaimed book, The Mushroom Cultivator, which was published in 1983. In the 1980s, he operated a mushroom spawn business, and in 1989, he started Namex, a business that introduced medicinal mushrooms to the U.S. nutritional supplement industry. He traveled extensively in China during the 1990s, attending conferences and visiting research facilities and mushroom farms. In 1997, he organized the first organic mushroom production seminar in China. Jeff's company, Namex, was the first to offer a complete line of certified organic mushroom extracts to the U.S. nutritional supplement industry. Namex extracts are used by many supplement companies and are noted for their high-quality based on scientific analysis of the active compounds. Let's get started. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of Healing Intentions. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian Mimetti, and today I have a really special guest, Jeff Chilton. Welcome, Jeff.
Hey, Dr. Mimetti, very nice to be here with you today. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you for taking the time. I know you're down in Oaxaca, Mexico, as you mentioned, and very interesting place with lots of history, you know, related to mushrooms of all kinds. And, you know, we'll get into that later, but just cool that you happen to be down there right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is nice to be here. And this is the heart of mushroom country in Mexico.
Absolutely. So, you know, you are the, you know, founder of, you know, multiple different companies in the, you know, medicinal mushroom space, and, you know, have written a really popular book, The Mushroom Cultivator. What, you know, bringing it all the way back to the beginning, you know, what kind of got you into this whole business? How did you get started in mycology and in the mushroom business?
Well, you know, I was raised in Seattle, Washington, Pacific Northwest. The climate there is the best climate in the world for wild mushrooms. So, you know, it's an evergreen state. It's forests everywhere. Plus, as most people who live here will tell you, it rains a lot. Mushrooms like wet climates. So when I grew up, there's mushrooms all around me. And then when I went to university, I decided, well, first of all, my major in university was anthropology, because I just really loved the whole idea that there's all these cultures out there doing things differently. And I really wanted to explore that. But we also had one of the better mycology departments in the United States at the University of Washington. So I studied mycology as well as anthropology. And in fact, I put the two together and looked at historical use of mushrooms for food, medicine, and also, as you can imagine, for shamanic purposes. I mean, after all, Dr. Mimetti, it was the 60s. Now, come on. Right, so we were doing a lot of explorations then, and mushrooms were a part of that. And I really read all about what was going on at that time down here in Mexico and the rediscovery of these different psilocybin mushrooms in Mexico in the 50s. So my study was in mushrooms and in anthropology, but what do you do when you get out of university with a degree in anthropology?
Right.
Or even mycology for that matter. So I was funny because I thought, well, gee, I'd love to learn how to grow mushrooms. I talked to my mycology professor. He said, hey, there's a mushroom farm 60 miles down the road in Olympia, Washington. Go down there, talk to Bill Street, the owner. You know, maybe you'll get a job down there. I went down, I applied for a job. I got a job. I was really excited. I was there for the next 10 years,
wow,
living literally with mushrooms because it was a big farm, 2 million pounds of agaricus mushrooms per year, an army of harvesters. I mean, yes, it was, but I loved it. I really did, because at that point in time, growing mushrooms, I mean, for me, it was just like watching these things grow and being a part of that. It was just fascinating. I was totally into it.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You are in the perfect area for it. And, you know, you're literally surrounded by, you know, what is it that in that fantastic fungi documentary, they talked about how that's like the largest organism in the world, right? That mycelial mass that's underneath.
Sure. Yes. And indeed. And that's something that we can talk about too, because one of the things I like to do is sort of explain a little bit about this organism that we call a mushroom.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the thing about it is all we ever see is that mushroom.
Right.
And it's like, you know, think about this in the past, it's like people are like, well, where did this thing come from? All of a sudden it's there. Right. And I'd love to grow it, but it doesn't have any seeds. How do we do this? Because, you know, imagine that you're a human and you've known how to collect seeds and plant them, and up comes a plant. And here comes this other really weird organism. Up it comes. And then you're like, okay, it's good to eat. It gets me high. It's pretty cool. But how do I grow this thing? There's no seeds. What do I do? Well, first of all, mushrooms have spores. Now, what happens in nature is when those spores are produced, they fly out in the air currents, they land on the ground, they land on wood. When conditions are right, those spores will germinate into a very fine filament. And when multiple of those spores and those filaments come together and fuse, they will create a network. That network is called mycelium. We never see the mycelium, generally speaking, because it's underground or it's inside that piece of wood that mushroom is growing off of, or inside that tree the mushroom's growing off of. So that mycelium is what we call the vegetative body. That's the actual body of this fungus. Now, it's out there, and the beauty of it is it's decomposing all the organic matter out there with this mycelium, with bacteria, with little bugs and everything. It is decomposing all the organic matter that builds up every year. Without fungi and bacteria and so on, we would be covered. I mean, think of all the leaves, the branches, the dead plants, all of that organic matter every year that dies off, and there it is. It's got to be repurposed, and that's what mycelium is doing. It's repurposing all that organic matter, ultimately back to humus, where the plants then can reutilize it. So it's a really cool part of the natural cycle. Now, it will build up stores of energy in this mycelial vegetative body when conditions are right, which is in the Pacific Northwest in the fall, when our rainy season comes, temperature goes down, starts to rain, which means humidity goes up. Up comes this mushroom, which we call the fruiting body. The mushroom will ultimately mature over a period of, let's say, 2 weeks. It'll be different depending on the species. As it matures, there will be gills on the underside of this cap, and those gills will produce spores. Now we've completed the life cycle of the organism. We have what in the natural products industry we would say we have three plant parts. We have the spore, which is a reproductive organ. We have the mycelium, which is the vegetative body. And we have the mushroom, which is the fruiting body. And that's so important because each one of these plant parts will have a different amount of the medicinal compounds. So anytime you buy a supplement, the supplement by law has to tell you on the label, do you have the root? Do you have the flower? Do you have leaves? For example, a ginseng root, an echinacea flower, a ginkgo leaf. So the plant part is really important when we look to a plant for the medicinal value that it has. And this is where, of course, analysis comes in. This is where research comes in. But the most important thing that people need to know right now is that with this organism, this fungal organism, those are the three plant parts. Each one of those plant parts is being utilized these days as a nutritional supplement. And it's very important to know that when you go to purchase a supplement.
Now, in your perspective, like you mentioned that each part has different amounts of the beneficial compounds. What is the difference between the fruiting body and the mycelium in terms of nutritional, you know, supplement value? Because I've seen, you know, some supplements are all about the fruiting body. Some supplement companies are mostly mycelium. So it's like, what is your perspective on that? And which one is better? Or is it just depends what you're looking for?
Well, you know, mycelium is actually a very simple part of this organism. The job of the mycelium and what it does is it secretes enzymes that will break down the organic matter around it, and then it will suck it back in, use those nutrients to continue to grow. The important part of mycelium or the mushroom is in fact compounds called beta-glucans. And beta-glucans are in the cell walls of all fungi. Now the mycelium has got lesser amounts of beta-glucan, and the mycelium too does not produce those nearly as many medicinal compounds as a mushroom does. For example, nobody's out there eating psilocybin mycelium. They're eating the mushroom. Right. The same thing in traditional Chinese medicine. In traditional Chinese medicine, it's the mushroom. Now, of course, in earlier times, the only way you could get mycelium would be to dig it up out of the earth and try and separate it, which would be an impossible task, right? Today, you can actually grow mycelium in what's called liquid culture or fermentation in very large tanks of liquid, and that's liquid media. And so you can grow pure mycelium, and pure mycelium is a beneficial product. We've actually sold it before, but it has, through our testing, it has nowhere near the amount of beta glucans in it that the mushroom does. Now, what has happened and why you hear people like in the supplement market talking about mycelium or mushroom and what is better and all of this. Mushrooms are very expensive to produce. I can grow mushrooms and you know, on that farm, that big farm that I worked on, listen, I was a production manager ultimately. I know what the economics are on growing mushrooms. I can take those mushrooms to the marketplace and I can get, let's just say, $5 a pound for those mushrooms, fresh mushrooms. Now, the issue is that supplements are dried powders. What are you going to do now? You've got $5 for that fresh mushroom. It's 90% water. The minute you remove the water from that and you have a pound of dry mushrooms, now you have to get $50 for that same pound of mushrooms. So the economics do not work. Now, what has happened is in the United States, companies, knowing that, they started to grow mycelium and put it into the supplement market. But the problem was, and this has been a problem in our industry, the problem was that they grew it on sterilized grain. So you can imagine here you've got a gallon jar of probably 4,000 individual grains in it, and the mycelium, you put it in sterile culture, it grows because it has to be sterilized. It grows, it colonizes all that grain. At the end of, let's say, 30 to 40 days, it's completely covered all that grain. You take it out of the jar, you spread it out, you dry it. After you've dried it, you grind it to a powder. The problem is they never separate the grain from the mycelium. So what happens is you end up with mostly grain. And so when you test this product, as we do and as we have, what we found was that a mushroom will have 25% to 60% beta-glucan. It will have approximately 0 to 5% alpha glucan, which are starches or also glycogen. Mushrooms do not produce starch. That's what makes them very different from a grain. And that's why mushrooms, when you are eating mushrooms are low in calories. They don't have those starches that are so full of calories. Now, grains, that's why we eat grains. We eat grains for those calories. But what that means is that when you have produced this mycelium on the sterile grain, it's mostly grain. So when you measure the beta glucans in that product are approximately 5%, and the alpha glucans, which are the starches, are 30 to 60%. So what's happened is you have the exact opposite of what you want. Now, the other issue that we run into is that companies that manufacture those products actually sell them and call them mushroom. Now think about that for a minute. And just to give you an example of what they're actually selling, are you familiar with tempeh?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you know how it's made?
Mm-mm. No.
Tempeh is cooked soybeans with mushroom mycelium, with fungal mycelium growing on it. And actually, the fungus that they're using to grow on it does not produce a mushroom or a fruiting body. It's what we call an imperfect fungus. So that's a division in the fungal world where an imperfect fungus is what we would call a mold. So you've seen molds before on bread and things like that. And look, there it is. If you see it early, it starts out white, and then all of a sudden it'll turn green or black. When it turns green or black, those are spores. That's why people have mold allergies, because they have breathed in those mold spores. But a mold does not produce a fruiting body, whereas a mushroom, yes, does produce a fruiting body. So what's happened is that these companies are now producing tempeh, maybe with shiitake mycelium, and they grow that out on sterilized rice, for example. And at the end of the process, they grind the whole thing up. So think about taking a block of tempeh, and you can eat it, and you can see all the soy in there, and it's covered with this white stuff, which is kind of cool. You know, it's mycelium. We're actually eating mycelium when we eat tempeh. It's really cool. Wow. But it's a food, and they're drying it, grinding it to a powder, and then selling it as a mushroom. There is no mushroom involved in those products. And that's the issue, is the issue that it, when you go into that store and you look at all the mushroom products on the shelves, half of them, I'm not kidding you, half of them are these what I call myceliated grain tempeh type products, masquerading as a mushroom product, which means, oh God, how do I choose here? Well, you know, you've got to look closely. And one of the things that you can do is turn it over, see if in the supplement facts panel, it says mycelium. Okay. Okay. Now, you know, and if you look in the fine print in the other, it will often say myceliated rice, myceliated oats. Now that's if you're lucky. Dr. Mamedi, let me tell you, a lot of these products are being sold. They don't even tell you that it is mycelium, and they certainly don't tell you that the product is mostly grain. So can you imagine people that don't want to eat grains? They think they're getting a mushroom product. They buy this thing not even knowing that what they're getting is mostly starch and paying a lot of money for it.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. I know exactly some of the companies you're talking about, and that's unfortunate because they're, you know, big name, you know,
ported. I know. It's really unfortunate because, you know, it's one of those things too where celebrities that in fact own a company like this, and people really listen to them and everything they say. And it's, and in my opinion, it becomes very cult-like. But the fact of the matter is that for me, it's like, look, fine, go ahead. I mean, I don't really care about those people other than the fact that they're putting out a lot of disinformation, which I push back on. I don't, you know, talk about who the companies are, who the people are behind them, anything like that. What I'm trying to educate people about is the products themselves and the fact that, look, you're going to be getting a lot of grain powder when you wanted to actually buy a mushroom product. And we can prove that readily by the tests that we do. And in 2015, I did a white paper where I took 40 different of these myceliated grain products. I bought them off the internet. I also analyzed dried mushrooms. I analyzed mushroom extracts. I was able to build a profile of what an actual mushroom should have in terms of beta glucans, alpha glucans, which are the starches. And then we also analyzed for ergosterol, which is the fungal sterol. All mushrooms have it, and the amount will tell you if it's genuine or not. And then another compound called ergothionine. So we have a profile. We tested those. That's where I came up with all of the data that demonstrated beyond a doubt what these products are selling is starch with a small amount of actual fungal tissue. And you know, for me, it's something that's very unethical. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that will say, oh, yeah, the supplement industry, man, it is just like, oh, it's the Wild West out there. You never know what you're going to get. And they say it's unregulated. It's this or that. Look, it's absolutely regulated really tightly. But the fact that you can say, oh, my product's organic. Oh, it's got low heavy metals. Oh, it doesn't have pesticides because it's organic. That doesn't mean it's a good product. It can still be one of these myceliated grain starchy products with no mushroom in it at all and a small amount of mycelium. So this is really the issue, and what people have to be wary of. Look closely at the label. And the other key indicator, a couple of them, one is if it says made in the USA, it's one of these grain products. And also what we do is every single product that we sell, and look, Namex is a raw material supplier. We supply bulk extract powders to companies. They put out our products. We guarantee them for beta glucans. So look for a company that on the label has an amount greater than, let's say, 20% beta glucans or 30% beta glucans, whatever it is. And due to my white paper, which I published in 2015, it literally changed the industry. So if you go out there now online and you start to look at mushroom products, you will see a lot of brands now saying no mycelium, no grain, no starch, and also companies that will say X amount of beta glucans in our products. And look, some of these myceliated grain products, what they'll say is, oh, we've got 50% polysaccharides. Mm. Guess what are polysaccharides? Grains. So, and polysaccharide tests was something that used to be used as a metric before we got the test that we use now and that we've been using now for about 8 years. And that is a test that is very specific to fungal beta glucans. And it's a test that's being used by researchers worldwide. So it's easy to unmask these products with testing. And look, I love testing. I don't want to sell a product that I have no idea what's in it. I'm just saying, oh yeah, this is a mushroom product. And it's like, oh yeah, well, how do you know? Well, believe me, you know, it's like, listen, no, here are the tests that we run on our products. And I feel that's super important, whether it's a mushroom product or an herbal product, super important to have some kind of analytical metrics, which doesn't mean we're trying to build something up like one part of it or not. We want the same profile that's in the dried mushroom to be in our mushroom extracts, but we are going to measure the active compounds so we know they're there.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's important. I agree. And it's really interesting. You know, everything you said, it makes a lot of sense about the mushroom, the fruiting body, the mycelium, and the grain. I've heard that before. So it's good to hear that from you. But what do you say to, like, are there any benefits or, you know, do you know anything about the synergistic effects between the mycelium and the fungus? Like, I mean, between the fruiting body, like having those together, it's not to say that there's no benefit to the mycelium, right? It's just the problem is there's so much grain and issues. Like, is there benefit to kind of having both, or what would you say to that?
Well, you know what I'd say is I don't think there's really a benefit to having both, with the exception there's one mushroom out there, for example, that is lion's mane. Mm-hmm. Lion's mane has specific compounds in the mycelium that are called arenosines. The mushroom has compounds that are called haricinones. They both stimulate what's called nerve growth factor. Mm-hmm. Now, if that mycelium were grown in liquid culture and it was pure mycelium, then of course you could put those two together and you'd have probably a better product, or you could just grow the mycelium alone, put it out there. And look, in China, there are thousands of tons of mycelium that is produced every year. A lot of it is cordyceps, pure mycelium. I've got nothing against mycelium, but these products are not mycelium. And that's where it's kind of a bait and switch kind of idea. Oh yeah, we're selling you mushrooms, and oh yeah, we've got mycelium in there too. It's like, but you're selling us grain powder and you don't actually have mushrooms in there. So if the mycelium is grown in liquid fermentation, it's 100% pure mycelium. I've got no problems with that. None at all. Mycelium has definite benefits. Mm-hmm. Now, all our analyses show that the mushroom is more beneficial. As an example of that, reishi mushroom. Mm-hmm. Man, have you ever tasted a reishi mushroom?
No, not on its own. No, I've had it just in supplements.
Have you ever actually held a reishi mushroom in your hand or anything like that?
Not yet.
Dude, I've got to send you a reishi mushroom.
I love
just
that.
So you can have it, because it looks like, you look at it and you go, is this real? Wow. Because it's hard as wood. When you dry that out, it is hard as a piece of wood. It's not a mushroom that you eat. You could, you know, you'd bite it off and you'd be like, God, try to just chew a chunk of this. I can't. And then you'd be chewing like wood. But it's very, very bitter. And those bitter compounds are what are called triterpenoids. And reishi has 4 to 10% triterpenoids in the mushroom. in the mycelium, it has minute amounts of these triterpenoids. And that's one of the big issues, is that the mycelium does not produce very much of what we would call secondary metabolites, whereas the mushroom is a biofactory for secondary metabolites. So when you get that reishi mushroom, man, and you taste an extract of or something, you're just like, oh my God, hand me the water. This stuff is so bitter, I can't take it. Whereas if you were to taste just pure mycelium, it'd just be like, okay, yeah, kind of bland, not a lot there of the reishi. So, and this is the point, is it's the mushroom that is producing these compounds. Just like I was telling you with a psilocybin mushroom, man, it's in the mushroom. That's why people grow psilocybin mushrooms. That's why people eat the mushrooms. Nobody's producing mycelium to eat, for God's sakes. No, they're not. And especially not on grain, but the mycelium doesn't have anywhere close to what you'd have in the actual mushroom. So really, talking about mycelium to me is, there are certain products where they produce mycelium in these tanks. Then they extract them, concentrate them, and they produce very special products. Maybe you've heard of them. One, they're from turkey tail. One is called PSK. Another is called PSP. And these are pure mycelium extracts that one is made in Japan, the other's made in China. They've gone through a lot of clinical trials, because actually this PSK product is considered a drug in Japan because it is highly refined. Now, in the natural products industry, people and companies don't want that. They want a natural plant extract. They don't want products where you're building up just one constituent of that product. They want a full spectrum type of product, meaning the full complement of what you'd expect in the dried mushroom.
Yep. Makes sense. Wow. So I think you answered that question pretty thoroughly there on fruiting body is the way to go. Now,
absolutely.
What would you say are, you mentioned a few of them, but what other, like, are the main active ingredients of medicinal mushrooms? How does that break down? I know it's different in different mushrooms, but.
Yeah. And you know, the key component, like I was saying, of a medicinal mushroom is the beta-glucan. And why do we eat mushrooms? Why do we use mushrooms as supplements? We use them because research and history has told us that they potentiate the immune system. So those beta-glucans, we actually have receptors for beta-glucans. We consume them, they hit these receptor sites, they can then potentiate the production of immune cells, macrophages, NK cells, T cells. And the way I think we need to look, and the way I look at mushrooms in general, whether it's eating mushrooms or supplementing with mushrooms, is they are something that is working in the background for us. They are our, you know, I look at health, for one, as, okay, what's the foundation of health? Diet. Absolutely a good diet. And what is part of what we get out of our diets? We get, all sorts of minerals. We get proteins, carbohydrates. We also would get vitamins. Now, let's just say I want a supplement with a vitamin. I go, you know what? I'm not sure I'm getting enough vitamin D, for example. Okay, we'll take vitamin D. And when we take that vitamin D, we're not like, oh man, I just took some vitamin D yesterday and I feel so great today. That's not how it works, right?
Right.
We take a supplement because we figure, okay, that is something that maybe we're deficient, maybe we're not, but we know we're going to have enough of that because it's super important. And that's the way you need to look at mushrooms primarily. Is there something that's there for really as sort of protection? They're there for immunological potentiation. they're what I consider to be food as medicine. And that's the thing I love about mushrooms. They're not just a herbal medicine, like you'd think, okay, traditional Chinese medicine or traditional herbalism, where it's a medicine and it's probably not a food. Like there's a lot of herbs that we wouldn't eat as a food, but we would use as a medicine. Yep. Well, we're really lucky with mushrooms, because to me, can you imagine if all of our food was like medicine? I mean, it's like, and you know, we kind of want food to be that way anyway, because what we're eating has such a major impact on our health. And so we're, you know, if you're really paying attention, and like I know you are, because you're an integrative physician. So you're somebody who's holistic in your approach, right?
Yep.
And so, you know, diet is a huge factor. And then supplementing, you know, a lot of people say, supplements, why do you want to take supplements? Well, I want to take supplements because I just want to know that A, I've got enough of, for example, those particular vitamins, which I know are so absolutely important. Have you been reading lately about all the information that's been coming out about vitamin D?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's absolutely critical for our immune system, for our mood. I mean, on and on and on. And most people are so deficient, you know, because you get it from the sun. And, you know, in a lot of the northern climates, you know, you're right now in the winter, you can't get any vitamin D, no matter how long.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, listen, Adrian, the history of vitamin D is fascinating. And you know where they first picked it up in the West was in England. And all of a sudden, as industrialization was rolling in, the children in these cities were getting rickets. Mm-hmm. Their bones, and they were bow-legged, and their, you know, it was like it was not forming properly. And it was because of all the industrial pollution. They were not getting the sunlight. And wow. And how they figured this out was that the children in the countryside, no, it was all good. But in the cities, it was like, oh my God, what's happening to our children? And they figured it out. It was a lack of vitamin D. And like you said, I mean, in the northern climates, we don't get enough of vitamin D. And this is something that studies have shown with people who've gotten serious cases with COVID, is that their vitamin D levels are generally low, much lower than they should be. Yeah. So we have so much evidence of how important that is. And so for me, I'm like, mushrooms and a mushroom supplement are in that same category. If you want to be taking these in a regular way, you don't want to be going, hey, I've been taking that for a week and I haven't seen any benefits yet. What's going on? No, that's not how it works. It's just like certain foods that we eat. So they're working in the background. They're there to potentiate your immune system. That's how they work. That's what scientists have told us. And that is primarily due to the beta glucans that are in those mushrooms. And there is a large body of scientific information that has demonstrated that through. It's interesting because now mushrooms will all share the beta glucans. All of the major medicinal mushrooms have beta glucans. They all will have ergosterol, which is also something that, you know, it's the fungal sterol. And what's interesting about ergosterol, actually, we were talking about vitamin D. Well, ergosterol is a precursor to vitamin D in mushrooms. You know, when we get vitamin D, vitamin D is, of course, the UV light we get from the sun. But what happens is it is hitting our skin, and it is turning cholesterol in our skin into vitamin D3. So it's the same with fungi, except that the UV light from the sun or whatever source is turning the ergosterol into vitamin D2. Now, mushrooms don't have a lot of vitamin D on their own, but when you expose them to UV light, they will produce a lot of vitamin D2, which is really cool. I really love that. And that's something we've been working on as well. But now, some of the other mushrooms, like, for example, cordyceps, it has compounds in it. One is called cordycepin. And what it's been used for traditionally has been fatigue. And somebody's had an illness and they haven't quite been able to get over the hump on that illness. And so they'll give them cordyceps to give them some energy and get over the fatigue. And it's also used for a high elevation travel too. It seemed to basically help with oxygenation of the blood. So cordyceps is kind of an interesting mushroom that way. And cordyceps used to be, and still is actually, wildcrafted, but the cordyceps is called caterpillar fungus. And so the wildcrafted cordyceps actually has a caterpillar attached to it. Mm. Now, can you imagine taking that out to the marketplace in North America and saying, hey, got this great new herbal product, and it's this small little fungus that's growing on a caterpillar. What do you think? People are like, whoa, right. I'm not sure if I'm ready for incense yet. And besides, is that caterpillar actually meat? I'm a vegetarian. Mm. So actually what's really cool is that we've just learned how to grow cordyceps. And now we grow a species of cordyceps called Cordyceps militaris. And it has been used interchangeably with the wildcrafted cordyceps, which is Cordyceps sinensis. And what's interesting about that is that Cordyceps sinensis in China today, 1 dried kilo of Cordyceps sinensis is worth somewhere around $15,000.
Wow.
Can you imagine anybody like making that a supplement and selling it in the United States? It's just the economics doesn't work. So all the cordyceps, actually, the majority of the cordyceps that's in the marketplace is called Cordyceps militaris. And any product, or let's just say the majority of the products that might say, oh, we've got Cordyceps sinensis, they don't really have Cordyceps sinensis. They might have it if the cordyceps was a product called CS4, which is pure 100% cordyceps mycelium. And they grow a lot of that in China, but there is absolutely no caterpillar fungus in the supplement market. You might find it in Chinatown, in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, Vancouver, something like that, but it's expensive. You'd never be really able to consume it on a regular basis and not go broke. So, right. but it's really cool that now we can cultivate it. And one of the things that I'd like to say too is that we cultivate all of our mushrooms with one exception, and that is chaga. Chaga is something that you really can't cultivate. For those people that are familiar or even are not familiar with chaga, chaga is a fungus, or actually the manifestation of a fungal growth in a birch tree, and it grows off the side of the birch. It's not a mushroom. It's has very low amounts of actual mycelium. It's actually called a canker. It's the manifestation of a fungal disease. I just call it chaga. And I think that's the best way to do it, but it's not a mushroom. You know, a lot of commonly people say, oh yeah, chaga mushroom. Well, it's not a mushroom, but it is a manifestation of a fungal growth. It has been used for hundreds of years, primarily for stomach issues. It also has triterpenoids in it, like reishi, that are considered to be antiviral. So there are definite benefits for there. Have you ever seen a chaga?
I don't believe I have, no.
It is a gnarly looking thing. It grows off the side of a tree. It's black, it's irregular, it's hard as wood. And again, it is just something you're going, what is that? That is so weird. Anyway, chaga is another species that has good medicinal value. For if sometimes people say, well, what's the if you were just to say one mushroom, what would it be? And I would say, in my opinion, reishi. Reishi and turkey tail actually have the highest amounts of beta-glucans of all the medicinal mushrooms. So if you're really looking for one, look for reishi. Maybe turkey tail as a second on that, but reishi has the beta-glucans, some of the highest levels of beta-glucans, and also it has these triterpenoids, which give it that aspect that most of the other mushrooms don't have.
Okay, makes sense. Awesome. You mentioned China in there briefly. Why did you end up traveling to China to learn more about mushrooms? What's the whole story with that?
Well, you know, having studied mushrooms, mushroom growing all through the late 60s, 70s, and 80s, well, one of the things that I learned about was the fact that mushrooms had medicinal value. And all of this information was coming out of traditional Chinese medicine, a little bit out of Western herbalism, but primarily traditional Chinese medicine. So in 1989, there was an international mushroom conference in China. And I went, okay, it's time to go. And at that point in time, you know, I'd been involved in growing mushrooms for food up to that point. I knew about medicinal mushrooms, but was involved in growing mushrooms for food. And I thought, you know, that's great. But the whole idea of mushrooms as an herbal supplement, as something that had medicinal value, really was very interesting to me. And I thought, well, that would be a better path to follow. And because of that, I went to China in 1989. And oh, let me tell you, I mean, I went to all through the 90s, I went to mushroom conferences. I visited mushroom farms. I visited mushroom processors. I visited mushroom research institutes. And if you can imagine, it's such a big country with so many people. They have like 100 times the number of mushroom scientists that we have in North America. They have 10 different mushroom research centers in China. We have one in the United States. So if you really want to learn about not only mushroom growing, but mushrooms utilized for medicinal value, China is the place to go. And man, from those conferences and all my travels there, I made so many great contacts. And, you know, I told you earlier about the fact that you can't grow mushrooms in the United States and use those as supplements because of the cost. Well, that's the other thing I went to China for, is I looked for partners that could help me grow mushrooms over there and ultimately process them into mushroom extracts and then be able to sell them as supplements. Because I started my business actually in 1989. And in 1989, there was not a single herbal company out there that had a mushroom product in their product line. Nobody. It was something where all through the 90s, I had to educate supplement companies all through the 90s because, you know, you say, hey, have you heard about medicinal mushrooms? No. Well, they have these benefits in there. There's something that have been used for thousands of years. Oh, well, yeah, the problem is that none of my customers are asking for them. So why should I put them out? And so you end up in this kind of catch 22. So it took quite a while for companies to accept them. And, you know, one of the things about growing in China is a lot of people think about Chinese products and they have nothing but a negative opinion about it. But,
right.
But, you know, for me, it really is more a matter of where are they being grown? Are they being grown on the outskirts of some heavily industrialized city, or are they being grown out in the countryside, far away from any sort of industrial pollution? And that is where we grow our mushrooms. And what I tell people is like, look, in the United States, the amount of chemicals that we put on our food is just through the roof. It's just amazing, the amount of chemicals. So if you're really concerned about that, of course you should be eating organically certified vegetables and fruits and so on. And one of the things that I did was I took the largest organic certifier in the United States with me to China in 1997. We held the first organic certification workshop for mushrooms in China in 1997. And about 3 years later, we had the first organically certified mushrooms coming out of China. And they are being certified by European certifiers, not Chinese certifiers, anything like that. High quality European certifiers. And, you know, I talked earlier about testing. We test our products before they leave China for heavy metals, for pesticides, for the microbiological panel. And then when they arrive in the United States, we test them again a second time. So it's very important for us. We can't sell our products unless they have met the standards that are out there for all of these different particular things, whether it's pesticides or heavy metals. So really, you know, the products that we're selling, the mushroom products we're selling, you could not get them unless they're actually grown in China or somewhere else in Asia. And what's interesting about China is today, China produces 85% of the world's mushrooms.
Wow.
I know. That's what I thought too. Wow. 85%. And they are so efficient. And I tell you, Adrian, I feel so bad about China being demonized as it is today. I mean, it is just being demonized. And I work with people in China, very good people. I have great production partners over there that I work with. The Chinese people, I feel, you know, they have come in the last 25 years from a situation of a tremendous amount of poverty in China to where they've literally lifted 450 million people out of poverty. It's really an economic miracle. And don't get me wrong, they also are they have a totalitarian government. They've got a system in there, like you probably heard of, like the social credit system and things like that, that we would not really want. Although I swear to God, it seems like we're headed in that direction right now with all the censorship that I'm seeing.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
Hashtag
natural immunity is censored on social media. It's like, why is that?
Can you imagine that? I mean, my business is based around natural immunity, as is as a naturopath, or this whole business of supplements and natural products. It's built around natural immunity, and for it to be negated out there by Big Pharma, who I've been fighting all my business history and life. I don't take pharmaceutical drugs, and I feel very strongly about that. Now, you know, maybe at some point I might need something, but boy, before I would take anything, I would make certain that it has been well tested. And so many, if you look at the history of drug products, especially in the last 20 years, some of the drugs that they have come out with and have killed tens of thousands of people.
Yeah.
It is mind-boggling when you think of what Big Pharma has gotten away with.
Yep. Oh yeah. Criminal charges have been set against the Sackler family there with Purdue Pharma and the opioid epidemic that they caused, you know, knowingly lying to doctors saying their drugs aren't addictive and causing this epidemic now that 120 people overdose and die from opioids every day.
But yes,
you know, let's not dare talk about legalizing, you know, cannabis and plant medicines like, you know, mushrooms, psilocybin mushrooms that have been used for thousands of years as medicine. But let's go ahead and allow these pharmaceuticals to be legalized. It's just so funny, you know, once you know that.
Well, you know, I mean, look, my generation, which kind of, you know, my generation is from the 60s, we have been under prohibition of cannabis all of my life until recently. When we started smoking in the 60s and 70s and beyond, look, we were criminalized. They put people in jail for that. They fined them. They took away their property in a lot of cases. I mean, can you imagine the damage that prohibition has done over literally for 70, 80 years, we've had cannabis prohibition.
Yep. It's really unfortunate because a lot of people have suffered and only a few have gained from it. And, you know, it just doesn't make sense. You just look at every state that has legalized cannabis, you know, alcohol sales are down 20%. You know, opioid prescription rates are down 20%. It's like everything's better.
Absolutely right. I mean, look, these facts do not lie. These are facts on the ground. We know this here. And what did they do for the last 70 years? They filled our prisons with people who were smoking or selling cannabis.
Yeah.
Good God. I mean, that alone, there should be nobody in jail for cannabis right now. And if they are, it's a travesty.
Yeah, there really shouldn't be. And, you know, it's really awesome and exciting, though, to see that it's changing quickly here. A lot of people never could have imagined cannabis being as legal as it is, you know, back in the 60s and 70s. They couldn't have imagined that happening by now.
Oh, man, listen, I never really, I lost hope for it happening because I just figured, no, not in the United States. It is just too conservative a country when it comes to cannabis and what they call drugs, when actually those are all positive and what they're selling are the ones that are killing people, right?
Right,
so,
exactly.
And so I didn't think it was ever going to happen. And now the fact that they're actually prohibition has been lifted around psilocybin mushrooms, it is just like, oh my God, that to me too, I'm just like, that is so wonderful, because it was the same thing that I've been going through for the last 50 years, which was psilocybin mushrooms or peyote or LSD or any of these basic plants or compounds that will give you these wonderful experiences, whether it's healing, and I consider all of the experiences to be healing, whether they are done in a clinical setting or not.
Right.
There's so much to be learned. So for me, the change is now I'm just like, God, this is pretty amazing. And you know, as someone who's been in the mushroom industry all this time, and I know that psilocybin mushrooms very, very deeply. I know them very, very well and have been not only studying them, but consuming them for a long, long time. And to see things finally change, I mean, it's really encouraging. And you know, I'm especially encouraged by people like yourself, younger practitioners who are now being able to utilize cannabis and being able to utilize ultimately psilocybin mushrooms. I mean, man, you are so fortunate to be outside of what was years of prohibition.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's a really exciting time. I think there's a lot of paradigms that are shifting. You know, I think that's what it's about, is shifting the paradigm away from, oh, I don't have any power, my body isn't a self-healing, you know, organism. You know, the doctor knows everything, and I, you know, oh, it's just genetics and there's not much I can do about it. Bad luck. It's like, well, or you could realize you have the power, you are self-healing, you can do a lot of things. You know, 80-90% of diseases are lifestyle related, and that's under your control a lot of the time. You know, so of course there's, you know, diseases that have big genetic factors and everything, but the whole, you know, lifestyle and the way you live your life, like you mentioned, your diet and your sleep and your exercise and your thoughts and all of these things make such a big impact on your health and, you know, your healthy supplements you take. And obviously there's so many more benefits beyond the immune system and mushrooms. I mean, that's, you know, the most well-studied for sure, but it's so exciting, the kind of new research coming out, you know, with neurogenesis and all these different things that are happening. And when you combine psilocybin in there with a lot of these medicinal mushrooms and the blends, the synergies between it all,
pretty exciting time. It is. And you know, I look at, for example, psilocybin mushroom, and I think, well, here is probably the most interesting beneficial mushroom that we have out there. And just when you think about mushrooms in general, and you think, you know, I call them the forgotten food I call them the missing dietary link. I tell people, eat mushrooms, put them into your diet. Today, in the right markets, you'll have a choice of 6 to 7 different species. Some of them are highly medicinal, like shiitake mushrooms, like maitake mushrooms. You can buy them in these markets and eat them on a regular basis. I mean, I'm eating mushrooms 4 or 5 times a week. I mean, for me, it's just been a part of my diet for the last at least 50 years. So I strongly recommend that to people. I even basically say, look, before you even supplement with mushrooms, put them into your diet. Make them part of your normal diet. And if you want more, fine. You can supplement with mushrooms too, but be sure you're eating plenty of mushrooms. They're truly the missing dietary link.
Yep. Absolutely. I agree. And it's exciting. You know, I'll share this, that even here in San Diego, California, since I've been living here just over a year now, I've already met 8 people making psilocybin mushroom chocolate bars. And, you know, the laws aren't quite there yet, obviously decriminalized, whatever, you know, the entrepreneurs out there, a lot of them aren't waiting.
I know. Well, believe it or not, in Vancouver, British Columbia, we actually have stores that you can walk into and buy mushrooms encapsulated in microdoses. Mm-hmm. Right. These are stores you can walk into. They're selling them. It's not legal, but nobody is closing them down.
Wow. That's fascinating. Now, that reminds me of the shops in Amsterdam that sell the truffles. Now,
the truffles, yeah.
That's a sclerotia, right? What's the difference between that and what we were talking about earlier?
Well, look, a sclerotia is a hardened mass of mycelia. Sclerotia normally grow underground, but this particular species of psilocybe, which only a couple of these mushrooms were discovered in the wild, and the person who found them cultured them and then realized that they actually produced these sclerotia, which is so cool. I even grown them back in the 70s, and back then they were called the cosmic camote, and they also called them, the people selling them, they called them the New Age philosopher's stone. So they had interesting names, but look, they contain psilocybin, but quite low amounts compared to a mushroom. Like, they would probably have a tenth the amount of psilocybin in them. So if you wanted to buy those and eat them and take them on a normal trip, you'd probably have to eat probably 5 times as much. You know, let's say a standard, a higher dose of just psilocybe mushrooms is going to be 5 dried grams. You'd probably have to eat about 20 to 25 dried grams of those to get the same level of experience from those as the actual mushroom itself. So they're not that potent, but maybe for some people, just to be able to have these things and to be chewing them occasionally up as micro doses, that might be kind of like the perfect place for them.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. I just wanted to know about that. I heard about those and never tried them myself, but I was in Amsterdam, you know, pretty recently, and obviously went and visited the coffee shop and tried some of their local cannabis, but I didn't try any of the truffles. So just, you know, was curious about that. That's interesting.
Yeah. It's a really kind of a cool little product in a way. And that sclerotia is an interesting fungal growth.
Yeah. Very interesting. Okay, great. Well, what else would you like to leave the audience with here, Jeff? You know, something that you really feel like people should know about, you know, mushrooms or about Namex or about, you know, anything that kind of is on your mind that we didn't talk about.
Well, you know, we covered a lot of it, but I guess one of the key points for me would be basically, put mushrooms into your diet. Try shiitake mushrooms. Shiitake's a fabulous edible. It's got really solid medicinal value. Do that first. It's really important knowing how to cook them. Cook them in a hot pan. Cook them well. Too low a heat if you're cooking them. All the water will come out. They'll be soggy. Your kids will hate you when you try and serve them. They'll say, oh, I hate those mushrooms. They're so slimy. Cook them properly. So put mushrooms into your diet. supplement if you'd like more. And I think it's a good idea in general. But, you know, again, if you're a healthy person, just getting them into your diet is a great way to introduce mushrooms into your wellness regimen. And that's how you should look at them. Diet should be something that is more than just nutrients. It is these phytonutrients that are giving you all of these other benefits besides just the nutritional ones. Mushrooms are perfect for that. So definitely, and don't expect those mushrooms to be like, yeah, the next day or the next week. It's something where you should over time be able to say, oh, you know what? I haven't been getting as many colds or the flu, or I've been feeling a little better. You know, you should see an improvement. Again, don't expect that if you're, you know, not doing all the other right things, which is having a good diet, exercising properly, all those things that you just talked about, Adrian, that are so important. Because as you know, we're looking at something in a very holistic way. Mushrooms and supplements are just part of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, well said. I agree. And it's been a real pleasure having you on the podcast. I really enjoyed this, and look forward to, you know, keeping in touch and seeing what kind of you know, cool projects get developed here in this wonderful world of fungi.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and I just want you to know that I'm looking at the clock right now, and it's 4:20.
Oh, wow! Well, no coincidences there. It's a good time. No. To end.
Awesome. None at all. Well,
thanks so much for your time, Jeff, and enjoy the rest of your trip there in Mexico.
Very good. Thank you, Adrian, and we'll stay in touch.
All right. Thank you. Bye bye. We'll be right back.